Hey everyone, welcome or welcome back to the Summit Church podcast. At the end of this episode, be sure to take a moment to subscribe to our YouTube channel to catch more content that will encourage you in your journey with Jesus. And if this message inspires you, share it with a friend. I hope the next few minutes will be a blessing to you. Enjoy.
When you see stories or videos of life-changing growth in people, one of the things you have to keep in mind is timing. When we tell stories, often we telescope the events back to back to back to back to back, and that's good storytelling. That's what we need, but it's really easy for us to forget about the time in between, the twists and the turns, the unexpected, the waiting that sometimes happens when your journey begins until you get to that next plateau, that next chapter in your life, because growth is all about timing. Timing is key. And maybe you've tried to take a shortcut in growth of some sort. It's not really the best practice. Maybe it was with work or with money or with your fitness. But what I've learned is that growth never happens as fast or as directly as you would like for it to. And if I can be honest and share an example, one time I did try to take a shortcut. I thought I figured out something in the financial world, which, if you know me, makes no sense at all, but I was taken in a little bit by a cryptocurrency. Okay, I know, it's a little cringe, but a cryptocurrency in 2001, I just bought into the hype, but I gotta say, it wasn't just me. Micah, who was out here earlier, he was also a part of this, okay? And it was Dogecoin. It's so stupid. Here's a picture of it. I don't know why, I was just so captivated by Dogecoin, so I bought in. At 31 cents a coin. Here's what you got to know. I thought I could be a day trader, at least with this. Okay, so 31 cents, I was treating it like a stock. Buy it, hold it, sell it, buy a boat. I have never wanted a boat before, but people were saying it's going to go to $1, then two, and then 10, and I've never wanted a boat before. But if you're a Dogecoin millionaire, you can buy whatever you need. And if you've seen my car, you're probably thinking, Chris, maybe a car from this decade would be a better investment. It doesn't matter. I'm going to be a Dogecoin millionaire. I can buy whatever I want. And one day, Elon Musk even got behind it. And I was like, oh, okay, this thing's real. It's taken off, and it peaked at 71 cents a coin. And I cashed out at 51 cents a coin. And I made, I think, $400, which, as it turns out, is not enough money to buy a boat or a car, but I got a few tanks of gas out of it, and I decided to hang up my day trader visions of grandeur, came back to my real job as a pastor, which is pretty good, but I'm so easily bought into this idea of putting a little bit of money in and immediate, quick growth. That is so much more fun than a Roth IRA or a 401k or a 403b. It's way smarter though, right? Financial professionals don't advise flipping cryptocurrency for your retirement accounts, but that's not as fun. What we know, though, across all different mediums of life is this: growth is a process, and sometimes it's a very frustrating process, and there's all these different shortcuts you can try, and sometimes you'll just be embarrassed like I was, and sometimes they have lasting consequences. And for us, when we're people who say we want to grow in our spiritual lives, what does that actually look like? What does growth look like? Is it all positive? Is there some negative? What do we actually mean as a church when we say we want people to follow Jesus and find life? The people who write about this sort of thing, they refer to it as spiritual formation. So when you hear spiritual formation, we're just talking about spiritual growth. And the idea is something is shaping your life. For better or worse, forces bigger than yourselves are shaping your life. And the hope is if you've committed to follow after Jesus, the thing that is shaping your life is the vision of life that God has put forward. One of my favorite writers on this subject is Robert Mulholland. He wrote a beautiful book called Invitation to a Journey. And his definition for spiritual growth and spiritual formation is going to be our guide today. So if you came and if you brought your field guide for the five practices, we're going to be on page 15. Taking notes, our big idea for today is this definition. Spiritual formation is a process of being formed in the image of Christ for the sake of others. There's four key pieces here that when we hold them together, we have the beginnings of what healthy spiritual growth actually looks like. But if we remove any of these pieces, if we don't want our spiritual growth to look like one of these four things, what we'll get is a mediocre spiritual life, not the life that God actually envisions for us. Now, if you don't follow Jesus, or maybe you're skeptical, or you're maybe kind of on the margins of considering following after Jesus, why should this matter to you? It matters because spiritual formation is not optional. Whether you're a follower of Jesus or following some other vision for what life looks like, the people around us, the forces around us, are not neutral. Billions of dollars every year are spent to shape what you love via advertisement, to shape what you'll spend your money on, your time on, what you think your family and your friends, all of that is shaped by forces greater than yourself. So if you haven't committed to following after Jesus, the question to ask is, do you know what force that is greater than yourself is shaping you? And if you don't, today is a great time to consider, what are the motivations and the factors around me that are bigger than I am that are shaping what my life is going to look like? If we haven't met before, my name is Chris. I'm one of the pastors here at the Summit, and today is week two of our series called So Much More. We're looking at these five core practices of being a follower of Jesus: praying, growing, giving, serving, and inviting. Last week, Pastor Ryan kicked us off by talking about prayer, how it's a foundational practice, what it offers us, and then some practical steps to actually implement a prayer life. And today we're talking about spiritual growth. And so instead of specific practices for growth, we're going to talk about how do we think about what it means to be a follower of Jesus who is growing. So if you have your field guide, page 15, like I said, is where we're going to start. We're going to talk about our growth plan and next steps so that we're not just talking about spiritual growth, but we're actually beginning to implement it here in our lives. So when we break down this definition, and we'll throw it back there on the screens, when we get these right, what we see is a flourishing life. And when we get it wrong, we short-circuit the vision of the good life that Jesus offers. So the passage I want us to think about today is from Paul in Galatians, and it lines up well with this definition we're looking at. So Galatians 2:20 is where we will start. And it says this: My old self has been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. So I live in this earthly body by trusting in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. So the idea today is we mention this definition so much that it actually begins to stick in your brain. So if you're taking notes, write this definition down, but I want it to be something that you can recall from memory. So let's begin with the first part of our definition. Spiritual formation is a process. Spiritual formation is a process of being formed in the image of Christ for the sake of others. Now, I get it. Sometimes we wish that God would just, like, zap us into mature Christians, take that part of your life that you're wrestling with and just change you immediately overnight from an immature Christian to someone who is rich in their faith. And frankly, there are moments that are like spiritual growth spurts. It's exciting, and maybe that happened for you if you grew up in the church. Maybe in your adolescence you had those moments, or maybe early into adulthood or into marriage. Like, there's these seasons where you really feel like your relationship with God is rich and you're growing. But also, if we only make the highest of the highs the expectation for our spiritual life, we're constantly going to be disappointed, because also our lives, our spiritual lives, are also ordinary. And in the everyday, we also have to figure out, what does it mean to follow God when I'm not always on the mountaintop? What does it mean to follow God when I'm not feeling as close to God as I wish I were? And when we think about the spiritual journey only in those high moments, we will miss what is happening in the everyday, the steadiness of how God is with us. The author of the definition we looked at, he writes this about the process. What we don't realize is that often a period of apparent spiritual stagnation is a time in which we don't feel as if we're going anywhere, a phase of life in which our relationship with God seems weak or non-existent, the time of dryness, of darkness. What the mothers and fathers of the church speak of as the desert experience is filled with nurturing down below the surface that we never see. And if you've committed to the Christian journey, this will at some point be a reality for you. It's not all highlights. It's not all mountaintop experiences. And if we buy into that vision of spiritual growth, we will constantly be disappointed. But when we understand that our spiritual growth is a process that is sometimes incredibly frustrating, then we can actually begin to see the everyday and the ordinary as meaningful. And we could ask ourselves, what could God be doing in this moment? I think of the lives of people like King David, who had no idea that his moments of patience and battles as a shepherd were going to give him experience of what it was like to be a king and what he would need in those moments. Or the story of Abraham and trusting and wandering and how that would play out of being the father of many nations. Sometimes the ordinary and the things we don't think will matter in the long run play a huge role in forming and shaping shaping the future selves that we don't yet know are coming into existence. But if we get this wrong, when we forget that spiritual formation is a process, then we will constantly be frustrated by the slow nature of spiritual growth. Instead of asking, how could God possibly be with me and growing me in ways that I don't yet see in this moment? So the next part of our definition, so we start, spiritual formation is a process. The next part is about us being formed. Spiritual formation is a process of being formed in the image of Christ for the sake of others. Now, for me, I think this part of the definition is about one word in particular, and that word is control, because we would like this definition so much more if it said, spiritual formation is a process of forming ourselves into whatever we wished it would be. That's so much better. If our hand is always on the steering wheel of our spiritual life, guess what? We will never take a turn that we didn't see coming. We'll go at the pace and the direction that we want. But spiritual formation is not about what we do to ourselves. Instead, it is about where God is leading and guiding you and I. And sometimes that means it's uncomfortable. But if we don't let go of that process, we will constantly be frustrated with the direction our spiritual growth takes. Last week, as Pastor Ryan talked about prayer, what clicked with me is often the place that we can let go of control is in the midst of prayer. One of the most famous verses that people read and when we meditate on prayer comes from Psalm 46, and it says this, "Be still and know that I am God." It's a classic. And as I've been reading Tyler Stanton's book, Praying Like Monks, Living Like Fools, he tells us that that Latin word for be still is vacate, which is where we get the English word vacation from. And I love the conclusion he draws from that. Tyler Stanton writes this, "The invitation of prayer, anytime, anywhere, is this: take a vacation. Stop playing God over your life for a moment. Release control, return to the created order." Spiritual formation is a work that God begins in us. We talk about how the grace of God constantly goes before us. What's required for us is yielding, letting go of the control, controlling every moment, every step of that process. But if we forget this, when we forget that spiritual formation requires us being formed, then we will constantly fight for the right to control the process and then be frustrated at our missteps. Okay, the next part of our definition gets at the what we are being formed into. So spiritual formation is a process of being formed in the image of Christ for the sake of others. See, we don't believe that we are being formed into some nebulous, loose idea of what a good person might be. As people who are followers of Jesus, we say, no, what we're being formed into is very specific. It is more and more into the life of Christ and how he lived. I love Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of Romans 8:29. He says this, "God knew what he was doing from the very beginning. He decided from the outset to shape the lives of those who love him along the same lines as the life of his son. The Son stands first in the line of humanity he restored. We see the original and intended shape of our lives there in him." Being a follower of Jesus is committing to my life looking more and more like Jesus. And then whenever I look at the life of Jesus and our lines don't quite match up, it is repenting and returning back to God saying, "Lord, continue to shape me in that area. I can see where the lines of my life and the life of Jesus do not match up. Lord, continue to do that work in me." That's what the commitment to being a follower of Jesus looks like. But in our culture, the truth is, you and I are pressured to become carbon copies of whatever image of success we have bought into in the culture around us. So it might look different based on where you work or who you hang out with, but what does the good life look like to you? What does success look like to you? And why should you want to be formed in the image of Christ instead of any of those other images? I believe this is the reason. So the last couple of days, I've been in Springfield talking to a group of students, and we were talking about this idea of identity and finding meaning. And it's really tough for teenagers because in our culture, we primarily value people for what they do instead of just who they are. So what have you done? What have you achieved? Are you climbing the ladder? Are you measuring up to the people around you? And for us, we view teenagers and we say, well, teenagers don't really do anything. And the same thing is true of people who have retired from work. We struggle to find meaning in our culture if we're not doing something on a regular basis. And so all the other visions of the good life, of what success looks like, ask you this, what have you achieved? And that gets exhausting for your identity to be based on what you have done recently for me. But the way of Jesus is completely different. The way of Jesus is based on God's grace, not what you can achieve, not what you bring to the table. Jesus will never look at you and say, actually, you're not invited because you haven't achieved enough recently. You haven't measured up to the people around you, because that is never what it's been about. And so if you're asking, why should I care about being formed in the image of Christ? Why not whoever is successful around me? Why not look to achieve that? It's because achievement is a heavy burden to bear, to have your identity to be based on what you do. I remember in seminary, one of my professors was just very honest and transparent and talked about wrestling with retiring from being a professor. He was successful. He was known for that. He said, in a moment of prayer, the Lord told him, you're my child now, and you'll be my child when you stop teaching. And for some of us, our identity is so baked into what we do for a living, what we fill our days with, that when that thing is eventually removed, what is your identity going to be based on? And what Jesus offers you is to say, no, 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 you're a loved and accepted child of God before and after whatever it is you do. Whether you're the greatest at what you do, whatever it is, you are loved and accepted by me before you do any of those things. You're a child of God, not based on what you can achieve, but because of the goodness of Christ. And that is the good news. The good news is that God has said yes to you, not based on what you bring, but based on his very own grace. One counselor who works with really high-level executives, she talks about achievement and what it looks like. And she said this, achievement is the alcohol of our time. These days, the best people don't abuse alcohol, they abuse their lives. That's why when we meet people, what do we ask people? First time we meet them, oh, what do you do for a living? Like, it's so baked in to how we think about people. You are what you do in our culture. But the way of Jesus offers rest. Not status, not success. Instead, the way of Jesus offers rest. That's why in Matthew 11, he says, come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. So being formed in the image of Christ is a life built on grace, not achievement. But it actually, I think it's tougher than we think it would be, because we're so conditioned to be achievers that when we hear God's message of grace, actually accepting it is tough. And in his great book, Counterfeit Gods, Tim Keller puts it like this. If you want God's grace, all you need is need. All you need is nothing. But that kind of spiritual humility is hard to muster. We come to God saying, look at all that I've done, or look at all that I've suffered. God, however, wants us just to look to him. Letting go of achievement is a key part of being formed in the image of Christ and saying, more than anything else, my identity is not how great I am at whatever it is I put my mind to, but I am a loved child of God before anything else. When we get this wrong, when we forget that we're being formed into the image of Christ, then we will settle for any other image that offers you status, success, instant gratification, or whatever else meets the desires of your heart. You'll settle for that instead of Jesus. And now we're at the final part of our definition. And this helps us keep the why in focus. Spiritual formation is a process of being formed in the image of Christ for the sake of others. This final part helps us keep the why in focus, because it's so easy to make spiritual formation just about you and God and not involving the impact of other people. This is why Jesus tells us in Mark 12, it's this classic verse, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your mind, and with all of your strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. There's no other commandment greater than these. See, when we leave out the for the sake of others part of the definition, we short-circuit our spiritual health. We get a very individualized, very privatized faith. Sometimes people will ask me, is it possible for me to follow Jesus and never go to church? Is it possible for me to be a Christian and never be around other people? And they're kind of getting at this idea of, can my faith really be about me? Can my faith really be personal? And I think that's asking the wrong question. It reminds me of when people say, what can I do when you still love me? It's like, oh, that is not the question you're supposed to be asking. If you're in a relationship, you shouldn't ask what's possible and you'll still love me. You should ask, what's the purpose of this relationship? So is it possible for you to break trust and your partner to still love you? Maybe, but that's not the purpose of the relationship. Is it possible for you to be a Christian and never go to church? Maybe, but that's not the purpose of our faith. Is it possible for you to be a Christian and not ever be around other Christians? I mean, maybe, but that's not the purpose. It's like buying a Ferrari and only keeping it in the garage. Sure, you own a Ferrari, but that's not the purpose of owning a Ferrari, just keeping it in the garage. You got to get out there and drive the thing. And if your spiritual growth only means you and God are right and it never impacts anybody else, that's not the purpose of spiritual growth. Do you know what we call people who say that their relationship with God is great, but their relationship with everybody else is terrible? Hypocrites. Spiritual growth ultimately has to lead us to a place where our love, compassion, and grace for other people year over year is moving in the right direction. If your relationship with God doesn't impact the relationship you have with the people closest to you, then something has been short-circuited. Maybe you have a definition of spiritual growth that leaves out this final part, because spiritual formation has to keep at its center the fact that it has to impact other people, that it is for the sake of other people. And if you've never kind of sat down and asked yourself, okay, where am I at spiritually? If you have the field guide on page 5, there's a simple but very helpful spiritual health check. After service today would be a great time to say, okay, where am I actually at in these areas? Where am I at year over year? Do the people around me believe that I am growing in these areas? Because it's actually very normal, unfortunately, for things that begin as other-oriented to end up being self-serving. There's a story about the Rescue Society of New England, this group of volunteers that was organized because people were losing their lives on the coast of New England through shipwreck. So these volunteers came together, they organized, and hundreds of lives were saved because of their efforts. They risked and sometimes lost their own lives in order to save other people. And then a new generation of the Rescue Society came about, and they really wanted to hone in on some of their practices. They wanted to have the best equipment. They had seminars. They really perfected the art of the rescue, and they would have classes endlessly. And then one day, while the entire society was at yet another workshop, a huge passenger liner hit the coast, and hundreds of people lost their lives because there was no one there to actually perform the rescue, because the Rescue Society started to care less about rescue itself and all the things around rescue. And the risk for us is that we become people who are so used to talking about our spiritual lives and following Jesus that actually spiritual growth isn't what we focus on, just all the stuff kind of around it. And it's no longer about impacting other people, because the Rescue Society forgot that they don't exist for the sake of themselves. They don't exist just to have the best equipment and the best seminars. They exist for the sake of others. And if we get this wrong, if we forget that all spiritual growth ultimately is for the sake of others, then we will eventually use our spirituality as a tool to show people our superiority instead of showing them a healthy and an inviting spiritual life to join. So to sum it up, to return to our definition one final time, and hopefully it's kind of lodging in your brain right now, spiritual formation is a process of being formed in the image of Christ for the sake of others. These pieces have to be held together carefully, but when we actually remember them and when we actually commit to them, something incredible happens. When we realize that spiritual formation is a process, we will no longer be frustrated by the slow nature of growth, but instead begin to see God in the everyday and in the ordinary. When we realize that spiritual formation requires us to be formed, then we will let go of the need to control every aspect of it. When we realize that we're being formed in the image of Christ, we will stop settling for all the other alternatives of success based on achievement and instead settle for nothing less than Jesus himself. And when we realize that all of it is for the sake of others, then we will use our spirituality as a tool to help other people experience God, not exclude them from the club. And this is what the beginning of healthy spiritual growth can look like. So the question then has to be, what are we actually going to do about it? Because the reason we're kicking the year off like this is because we know that you just don't drift into a healthy spiritual life. You don't drift into greatness, into a more healthier life with God. You drift into what's ordinary, into what is easy. So let's have a plan. So if you have your handout on page 17 of the field guide, we have a growth plan there for you. And we've already filled in a couple things that you can do, but it's customizable. The main thing is that you're thinking about it. What are you going to do over the next 4 weeks, 4 months? What are you committing to? And we try to give different levels. So if it's like, hey, a great thing for me this year would be to come to church on a more regular basis, to commit to whatever it is and actually show up. Or maybe it's a class, or maybe you want to meet people. We're trying to set different levels, different on-ramps for people so that no one has an excuse, that everybody knows that they don't have to do it alone. They can do it with somebody. The next thing is to figure out what your plan is actually going to be. Now, we've talked a lot about interest groups. I'm doing Theology Thursdays. I have some spots left. I would love it if once a month you would come, eat some food, read a theology book with me, and let's just talk about it. But maybe that's not your thing. Okay, we have burnt-ins. We have photography. I'm pretty sure some people are knitting. Some people are playing card games. Here's the deal. That might sound so very ordinary, but there's something incredible when you start hanging around and being around people who are committed to the same journey as you. So they can encourage you along the way in the process. You can know, I don't have to do this alone. And maybe it's just finding the best coffee in the city, but then maybe you do a Bible study together. Maybe now you have a core group of people who you can bring issues and concerns and worry to. What is your next step going to be? The other thing that we have for actually each one of our weeks is we have these short devotionals for each one of the five practices. So for growing, the activity on day one is something that I did in seminary. I did it begrudgingly, honestly, like most things I did in seminary, but it was actually very helpful, and that is to write a spiritual timeline for yourself. Just draw a line, start with birth to now, and it doesn't all have to be rosy and the best of memories, but just mark out what are the moments, who are the people that have been the most formative for your life. Look back at that, appreciate it, acknowledge it, and then say, what's my plan moving forward? What do I hope my spiritual life is like in 1, 2, 5 years? What do I hope the people around me say about me spiritually? And if you're someone who's like ready to dive in, page 21 is full of resources, whether it's a book or a class or a podcast. I hope that you guys can tell what we tried to do here was to say, no. We're here with you. Here's the resources. You can do it. You're not going to drift into spiritual health, but you also don't have to do it alone. We want to partner with you as a church to see that in 2024, God has so much more than an ordinary spiritual life for you, and you're invited into that journey. So today, we're going to have another time of singing and reflecting, and I pray you don't leave here today without a next step for growth in 2024. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for the life of your Son, showing us what full life in you can look like. That when we look at the life of Jesus, we can see what you've called us to and what you've invited us to. And here in this room, there's so many different stories. People are in different parts of their journey following you. And I pray that every single person would feel encouraged to take a step, to know that they are loved, they are accepted by you, not because of what they do, but because of who you are. And today, they would not leave without committing to growing, to having a healthier spiritual life, knowing that it's not a journey they have to do on their own. They can partner with other people here in this room who are walking the same journey and moving in the same direction. We love you. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.